Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX. The following articles are from the February 2024 The Spectrum Monitor, and we begin by finishing the remainder of The Shortwave Listener by Fred Waterer. February Shortwave Highlights. Topics in the January 11th edition included Germany's Winter of Discontent, the plight of hundreds of British sub-postmasters falsely accused of theft, NATO is looking for a new Secretary General, and Denmark has a new monarch. Also, Turkish espionage arrests, Abkhazia's government in exile, and Spain's economic gamble. And for something entirely different, we recommend our themed specials, Europe on the Move and Women of Europe. Get in touch. Inside Europe is hosted by Kate Laycock and produced by the show's founding editor, Helen Cini. To get in touch with the team, contact InsideEurope@dw.com. To hear episodes, clips, and to learn more, go to dw.com. Tony Blackburn was awarded an OBE for his services to broadcasting and charity in the new year. In a statement given to the PA news agency, he said, "Receiving this honor is truly unexpected and very humbling. When I first replied to a new Musical Express advert looking for DJs back in 1964, I never imagined that nearly 60 years later, I would still be doing something I love so much. To still be in a radio studio a few times a week, being welcomed in to so many listeners' homes, sharing mine and their memories, and playing the music I love is simply wonderful. To be recognized for my work in broadcasting in this way is testament to all those I've had the pleasure of working with over the years, on both the BBC and in commercial radio. It really is the best job, and to receive this award is the icing on a very lovely cake. 60 years in radio is an amazing career. Tony has been heard on the Offshore Pirates, the World Service, BBC Domestic Radio, and has hosted important broadcasts like the Eurovision Song Contest. BBC Program Highlights, Times UTC. All BBC programs can be heard online after they air. Witness History. In 1989, the BBC was criticized for broadcasting an interview with the widow of the leader of the British Union of Fascists, Sir Oswald Mosley. Lady Diana Mosley was a well-known member of the British aristocracy who had fraternized with Adolf Hitler and other members of the Nazi Party in the build-up to World War II. The interview on BBC Radio 4's Desert Island Discs was particularly controversial because of Diana's denial of the Holocaust and continued admiration for Hitler. Matt Pintus has been listening back through the conversation for Witness History. BBC World Service's Witness History is the program that brings you fascinating moments in history told by the people who were there. Monday, January 22nd, 0850 to 0900. The documentary. Joe Glanville meets Berliners who have researched the stories of the Jewish families who once lived in their homes. Marie, Hugh, Anka, and Matthias all became fascinated by the history of the families who lived in their flats before them when the Nazis were in power and wanted to find out what happened to them. Their discoveries are an intimate portrait of how lives were turned upside down and offer a new way of honoring the memory of Berliners who lost everything in the Holocaust. Joe Glanville visits one of the surviving residents, 95-year-old Ruth, now living in the UK, who vividly remembers what it was like to grow up in Nazi Germany and tracks down the house in Berlin where her own mother spent part of her childhood. Tuesday, January 23rd, 0930 to 1000. The documentary. The stories they don't want told. global investigations and gripping storytelling, holding the powerful to account. Delve into a world of secrets, The Disciples, a major new BBC investigation. Wednesday, January 24th, 1130 to 1200. Woke Wash. From Razor Company, talking about hashtag MeToo, to an LGBT sandwich in a burger chain tackling depression, writer and satirist Hayden Prowse unpacks how some of the world's biggest corporations are falling over themselves to appear socially conscious, progressive. And he lifts the lid on the advertising and PR companies who've woken up to just how much money they can make helping them. In this first episode, Hayden investigates corporations' approach to LGBTQ+ inclusivity. He'll trace the history from brands' first engagements with gay customers to the situation today, where Pride Month sees the high street and social media festooned with corporate rainbow flags. Hayden will ask how many companies live up to this inclusive message and actions. This episode will also take a look at the backlash to brand engagement with LGBTQ+ issues that has been seen in the UK and the USA as the corporate world is drawn into the culture wars. It's led to boycotts and hasty backpedaling. But what's really going on and why? Radio 4, Thursday, January 25th, 1600 to 1630. Soul Music, Strange Fruit. 2024 marks 85 years since Billie Holiday made her iconic recordings of the song Strange Fruit, April 20th, 1939. Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root. From the series about pieces of music with a powerful emotional impact, Soul Music focuses on Billie Holiday's famous song, expressing the horror and anguish of those communities subjected to a campaign of lynching in the American South. Despite its association with the Deep South, the song was actually composed in 1930s New York by a Jewish schoolteacher, Abel Mirapol. In addition, 4Extra broadcasts Great Lives, Billie Holiday, Thursday, January 25th at 2100. Matthew Paris and guests Pauline Black and Julia Blackburn discuss one of the greatest jazz singers of all time. BBC Radio 4Extra, Friday, January 26th, 2030 to 2100. And now Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR, KS4ZR numeral 1 at gmail.com. Technician class voice privileges on the 10-meter band. As a novice licensee in 1988, I was pretty excited to have voice privileges in the 10-meter band. Sure, I'd be pounding the key on the other bands that allowed lowly novices intent on increasing their CW speed in order to upgrade to general, but the fun was working worldwide DX on 10 meters SSB. And the best part was that the monthly sunspot count in those days was in the 150 to 200 range, far outstripping the sunspot count that gets hams excited today. Operating on voice alone, it was no trick for a novice to work all states WAS or DXCC, work and confirm 100 approved DX entities on 10 meters. Conditions were that good. That was great at home in the shack, but what about those boring hours in the car with only AM/FM radio or a cassette to listen to when all that worldwide DX was crowded into 10 meters waiting to be worked? And don't imagine, I would be mounting my new Kenwood TS-140 in the 10-year-old Toyota Celica. There wasn't any room. Besides, nobody wants their $1,000 ham rig temptingly sitting in their car, no matter how much room there might be. It wasn't long before I put in a call to one of the many mail-order radio retailers to buy a Uniden 2510, an all-mode, 10 meters only transceiver, considerably smaller than the TS-140, and at about $250, one quarter the price. Adding a Hustler 10-meter whip to the trunk lip of the car, and suddenly the commute wasn't long enough. It was a pretty sweet setup for an East Coast commuter. In the morning, 10 was open to Europe, the Mideast, and Africa. By the afternoon commute, the U.S. Western States and Hawaii could be worked as well. And by the evening, the Pacific DX was rolling in. Japan, Australia, New Zealand were regulars. The Uniden 2510 allowed CW, SSB, FM, and AM modes with 25 watts maximum output, which on 10 meters, when there's decent propagation, is plenty. In 1987, Uniden made a version of the 2510 for Radio Shack, branded as the realistic HTX-100, and sold in its catalogs and thousands of stores nationwide. That was virtually identical. Both transceivers sold for about $260, $717 in today's money. Once solar cycle 22 disappeared and we moved into cycle 23 with a new millennium, the standalone 10-meter rigs disappeared as well once the stock was depleted. You might think that current band conditions would cause legacy HF transceiver manufacturers to consider a modern take on those old 2510s and HTX-100s. But that's not the case, though the pack rats on eBay are ready. Used Uniden 2510s sell for anywhere from $250 to $300 with shipping. Yes, about the same price as they sold for new over 35 years ago. Radio Shack went out of business years ago, and Uniden hasn't made a 10-meter rig in at least 20 years. So, what's a tech operator to do? One Chinese company is making inexpensive two-way HF radios. The company with the odd radio name, Radiodity. Their QT40 10-meter transceiver is jam-packed with features everyone wants to see in a mobile 10-meter transceiver. AM, FM, SSB transmission modes, adjustable power output from 1 to 40 watts, FM offsets for 10-meter repeaters, and PC computer programmable, all with a price of $170. The CB lookalike QT40 will be an immediate turnoff for some hams, but I argue that if you look deeper into this radio, it's a very inexpensive way for technician-class hams to get a feel for HF action while the solar cycle is at least trying to cooperate. If you're really too embarrassed to be seen using what looks like a CB on the ham bands, then Radiodity offers the QT60 10-meter transceiver with 60 watts and a direct frequency readout, which is more like the old Uniden 2510 or HTX-100 for $259. Back to the QT40. If you're a budget-minded technician licensee, the QT40 offers a route to DXCC and WAS, as well as contests with a minimum of cash outlay. While advertised on their website for $200, as this was written in early January, the QT40 is being offered at $169.99, plus they'll throw in a mag mount antenna base with connected cable, which looks like it was designed for a VHF-UHF antenna. You provide the antenna element. And when mine arrived, oddly, they also threw in a portable, solar-powered, hand-cranked AM-FM radio. I have no idea why. The QT40 was wrapped in so much plastic and bubble wrap that it would have eventually bobbed to the surface had the container it was shipped in fallen off the ship on the way over. Once I uncovered the QT40, I soon realized that the very thin manual would not suffice. Not to worry, the denizens of YouTube have created enough intro to the QT40 videos for you to learn everything you could possibly want to know without actually looking at the manual. In fact, looking at the videos is far preferable. I never would have guessed how to turn off the loud beep function that irritated from the moment I first turned on the radio. Hint: hold down the up button on the microphone while turning on the radio brings up the function mode, allowing you to adjust things such as turning off the beep function. Turning off the radio saves the settings. I have to admire the ingenious, diabolical engineers who crammed an amazingly useful 10-meter rig into the form of a CB radio, complete with chromed plastic front, a red LED channel number window, and vintage-looking S-meter that actually works quite well. It was a well-thought-out effort, though the complicated method for changing frequency may have some wishing they had just coughed up the extra $90 for the QT60 and some peace of mind. Some of the features are welcome. The front panel switch that lets the radio receive all NOAA weather radio frequencies is a very useful feature for a mobile transceiver. I found the weather radio feature very sensitive. The simple S meter is easy to read and very accurate. The echo effect and Roger beep are dead giveaways that this is closely related to CB sets. But as long as you don't engage those features, no one needs to know. In all the contacts I've made using this radio, I have had no negative comments about the audio quality. Some may find the knobs a little cramped for space. Three of the knobs have inside and outside knob functions. There's plenty of space between slide switch positions. The S meter is well lit and easy to read, but reading glasses are recommended for older eyes when it comes to the settings on the knobs. The receive transmit LED lights green for receive mode, red for transmit mode, and yellow for position switch error. Displays E4 for transmitting out of band. Make no mistake, this is a well-made transceiver. There's nothing cheap about it. It may look like a CB set from 1982, but it's quite nice. FCC certification and notes on mobile operation. The QT40 is known to the FCC as the TK4ARESII, made by Kishian Electron Science and Technology Company Limited, Quanzhou, Fujian, China. You can look up the various test reports using the product's FCC ID T4K-ARESII. As such, this transceiver is certified for use on the 10-meter amateur radio band. On its website, Radiodity notes that while an amateur radio license is not required to buy this transceiver or even to use it to monitor the 10-meter band, they correctly state that transmitting with this radio as sold requires an amateur radio license. While educating yourself through the efforts of various YouTubers, you may become aware that it is possible to convert this transceiver for use on other frequencies, including the U.S. citizens band. Doing so is against FCC rules, because the transceiver is not certified for use on the U.S. citizens band. So, don't do the modifications suggested on various sites, and don't operate this transceiver on bands for which it is not certified. You would not want to put your amateur radio license in jeopardy by being caught using a 35-watt AM transceiver on the citizens band. If you want to use this transceiver installed in a vehicle for mobile operation, note that at full power, the radio draws 8 amps with modulation, which may exceed the limits of your vehicle's auxiliary power plug. It would be best to wire the power cord directly to your vehicle's battery to avoid blowing a fuse when keying the mic. The power cord does include an inline fuse. Another thing to consider is that, thanks to the peculiar tuning system, it will be a hazardous distraction to tune around looking for stations while driving. However, I found that understanding the tuning system lets you more safely operate. For example, setting the band knob in the B position and using the microphone's up button allows you to land on all the 10-meter frequencies from 28.2 MHz to 28.395 MHz in 5 kHz increments, channels 1 to 40 on the little channel window display, without having to do anything more than touch the up button. When you go past channel 40, it reverts back to channel 1. Moving the band switch to the C position and pressing the mic's up button lets you land on every frequency between 28.4 MHz, channel 1, and 28.5 MHz, channel 21, in 5 kHz increments. Anything more than that will require you to take your eyes off the road and is not advised. Caveat utilitor. Using this transceiver in mobile operation requires the installation of a mobile antenna. If you use the mag mount base included in my purchase, you'll have to provide your own radiating element, which may not be easy. However, any well-designed CB antenna will work, though you may need to trim it a little to get the best match. I found that there are CB antennas on the market that are not up to old CB standards. Having had one flop over and bounce around on the top of the car once interstate highway speeds were attained. I heard an operator in Wyoming using the QT60 with a Wilson 5000 mag mount antenna, $160, atop his pickup cab, working states from coast to coast. Using the QT40 at home is much easier, but it will require a hefty power supply. I use an Astron 12-amp power supply, which I happen to have at the desk. If you have to buy one new, they are about $160. Or you can use a rechargeable deep-cycle marine battery, about $200 at Interstate Batteries, and a battery charger. If you're using the QT40 at home, you'll need a good antenna. That's because you're limited to 35 watts in SSB, so the better your antenna, the more fun it will be to operate. Building a simple wire dipole is easy, extremely cheap, and can be hoisted at least one wavelength above ground, about 30 feet. A simple rotatable dipole for 10 is also relatively easy to make out of aluminum tubing you can buy at most hardware stores, which you can rotate with a TV rotator in the direction of the station you're trying to work, making the most out of your 35 watts. A quick Google search will show you the way. The best 10-meter antenna for the money could be the high-gain LJ103BA, a three-element 10-meter beam, $330 at DX Engineering, which can be rotated by a hefty TV antenna rotator. The addition of this directional antenna would add between 5.3 and 7.5 dB gain, according to the manufacturer's specs, and will make your 35 watts sound awesome wherever you point your beam. The longest element is about 18.5 feet, the boom length is 8 feet, the wind surface area is 2 square feet, and the total antenna weighs 15 pounds. Odd 10-meter-only radios are nothing new in the amateur radio market. The Galaxy Company has been selling 10-meter transceivers in the $300 to $400 plus range for decades at major truck stops across America. But since the advent of the internet, these are now easily found online, even on Amazon. Anytone, another popular Chinese amateur radio maker, has their own 10-meter transceiver at $260 on Amazon. Anytone offers their own version of Radiodity's QT40, labeled as the ARESII, for $200 on Amazon. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.